Travis Walton incident was an alleged alien abduction of American forestry worker Travis Walton on November the 5th, 1975, while he was part of a logging crew in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest near Huber, Arizona. On October 20th, 1975, the NBC network aired the UFO incident, a special made-for-TV movie about the alleged alien abduction of Barney and Betty Hill. The film depicted a motorist who walks into the woods toward an overhead light when he is illuminated by a beam of light. Within weeks of the broadcast, Walton was reported missing to law enforcement after having walked into the wood toward an overhead light where he was illuminated by a beam of light. Police organized multiple search parties to look for the missing man. After 5 days and 6 hours, shortly after midnight on November 12th, Walton called his sister from a payphone in Heber, where he claimed to have reappeared after the abduction. Within days, Walton sold his story to tabloid The National Enquirer, which published the accounts nationwide and awarded the crew a $5,000 prize. In 1978, Walton wrote a book about his purported abduction titled The Walton Experience, which was adapted into the 1993 film Fire in the Sky. Walton's case received mainstream publicity, and Walton remains a regular guest on TV shows and podcasts. The Walton incident is widely regarded as a hoax, even by believers of UFOs and alien abductions. They note that the Waltons were longtime UFO buffs and pranksters who had recently watched a TV movie about a supposed alien abduction. They suggest one motive for the hoax was to provide an act of God that would allow the logging crew to avoid a steep financial penalty from the Forestry Service for failing to complete their contract by their deadline. In the spring of 1972, the National Enquirer tabloid began advertising a $50,000 prize for proof of extraterrestrial visitors. By 1975, the prize had been raised to $100,000. Travis Walton was born around 1953 to Mary Walton. On May 5, 1971, Travis Walton and associate Carl Rogers pleaded guilty to breaking into the offices of the Western Molding Company, stealing company checks, forging and cashing them. The pair were placed on probation for 2 years, after which they were allowed to plead not guilty and cleanse their records. In 1975, Travis, aged 22, was a member of a seven-person logging crew led by Carl's older brother, Michael H. Rogers, aged 28. The year prior, Rogers won a bid for a federal contract to thin out small trees from an area known as Turkey Springs in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest, wherein he underbid two other contractors. The Turkey Springs job called for the thinning of 1,277 acres by August 1975. Rogers requested and was granted an extension until November the 10th. On October 16th, a Forestry Service inspector visited the site and concluded the job could not possibly be completed by the deadline. Failure to complete the job could lead to a $2,500 penalty and disqualification from bidding on future Forestry Service contracts. On October 20th, Rogers wrote to his Forestry Service contracting officer, "I cannot honestly say whether or not we will finish on time. However, we are working every day with as much manpower as I can hire. I will not stop work until the job is finished or I am asked to stop. I have had considerable trouble keeping a full crew on the job. The area is very thick and the guys have poor morale because of this. We will keep working and trying hard." On October 20th, 1975, the same night that Rogers wrote to the Forestry Service, the NBC network aired a primetime special, The UFO Incident, a made-for-TV movie about an alleged alien abduction. The film starred James Earl Jones as Barney Hill, who had undergone a hypnosis session with a psychiatrist in 1964, after which he reported recollections of an alien abduction. Recovered memory therapy is not based on scientific evidence, and recovered memories are indistinguishable from false memories. The film aired 2 weeks before the Travis Walton UFO incident, prompting suggestions that the film inspired Rogers and Walton to concoct their own alleged abduction story. Psychologists and skeptics argued that after viewing this movie, any person with a little imagination could now become an instant celebrity by claiming an abduction, concluding that one of those instant celebrities was Travis Walton. According to researcher Philip J. Klass, shortly before his disappearance, Travis told his mother not to worry if he were ever abducted by aliens because he would return safe and sound. On November 5, 1975, logging crew chief Michael H. Rogers reported Travis Walton missing to the Navajo County Sheriff. Six members of the logging crew claimed they were driving down a forest road when they saw a lit object above the ground near the roadway. They reported that Walton got out of the truck and ran towards the object, which shone a light on him. They said they drove away in fear, only to return 15 minutes later to find both Walton and the light missing. At 7:45 p.m., a member of the logging crew called Officer L.C. Ellison. Ellison, Sheriff Marlon Gillespie, and Deputy Kenneth Coughlin drove to Hebert to meet with the loggers. Rogers and two crew members agreed to return to Turkey Springs with three officers, while the three other crew members refused to return and instead drove home in Rogers' vehicle. The five men searched Turkey Springs until shortly after midnight, when Sheriff Gillespie paused the search until the morning. Around 1:30 a.m., Navajo County Deputy Sheriff Kenneth Coughlin and Rogers visited Walton's mother. According to Coughlin, when he informed her of the disappearance, she said, "Well, that's the way these things happen." Coughlin said he was shocked by how calmly she took the news and her general lack of surprise. Walton, his older brother Dwayne, and his mother were described by the sheriff as longtime students of UFOs. Because Travis Walton's mother lived in a ranch house without a telephone service, Rogers drove her into town so she could call Travis's brother Dwayne and their sister while Coughlin followed. Around 3 a.m., Walton's mother called her daughter, waking her. Deputy Coughlin was again shocked at how well Travis's family took the news. The following day, November the 7th, a search party of nearly 50 people scoured the Turkey Springs area but failed to find Travis or any signs of an altercation. Law enforcement were surprised when, after a few hours, Travis's mother told them, "I don't think there is any use of looking any further. He's not around here. I don't think he's on this earth." Sheriff Gillespie then dismissed the volunteers. However, the following morning, November the 8th, Rogers and Dwayne Walton complained in person about the discontinued search. As a result, Sheriff Gillespie assembled another search party, which included a helicopter. Regional papers covered the story on November the 8th, and that day, a member of the Phoenix-based UFO Interest Group recorded a 65-minute interview with logging crew chief Mike Rogers and Travis's older brother, Dwayne Walton. At no point during the interview did either express any fear or concern for Travis. Rather, they expressed confidence that Travis would be returned. During the interview, Rogers discussed the logging contract, saying, "This contract we have is seriously behind schedule. In fact, Monday, the time is up. We haven't done any work in it since Wednesday because of this thing, and therefore it won't be done. I hope they take that into account." Forestry contracts included an act of God clause that excused contractors who were delinquent due to unforeseeable circumstances. During the interview, Dwayne revealed that he, Travis, and their mother were UFO buffs who had previously discussed that if they ever saw a UFO, they would immediately get directly under the object because the opportunity to go aboard a UFO would be too great to pass up. Dwayne repeatedly insisted that Travis was not even missing. "He knows where he's at, and I know where he's at." On November the 9th, law enforcement continued the search for Travis until late afternoon, when Walton's mother again requested the search to be halted. By November 10th, stories of Walton's disappearance were being published throughout the US, UK and Canada. On November the 11th, the press reported that Travis's mother felt any further searching for Travis would be useless. Also on November the 11th, Rogers and five other members of the logging crew were interrogated by Arizona Deputy of Public Safety Polygraph Examiner C.E. Gilson to determine if the men had murdered Travis Walton. All denied having harmed Travis. Gilson was of the opinion that five of the six men were being truthful and described results for the sixth man, Alan Dallas, as inconclusive. On November 12th, shortly after midnight, Walton placed a collect call to his sister's home from a payphone in Heber, Arizona. He reached her husband, Grant Neff, who then drove to pick up Dwayne and proceeded to Heber to pick up Travis. Neff later reported he initially thought the caller was intoxicated. As part of the collect call procedure, Travis told the operator his name. She recognized his name as that of the missing man and alerted Sheriff Gillespie, who dispatched a deputy to the family ranch house. Deputy Glenn Flake arrived at 2 a.m. where he witnessed Dwayne Walton transferring fuel from one car to another after having forgotten to purchase gas before local stations closed. Flake did not reveal that they knew Travis had returned home, and Dwayne did not tell the deputy that Travis had been found. Seeking medical attention for Travis, Dwayne reached out to UFO researcher he'd met days prior. The researcher referred them to Dr. Lester Stewart, a hypnotherapist. Dwayne took Travis to meet with Stewart, but his first words were that Travis needed a medical examination with lab tests and was not ready for hypnotic regression. Stewart noted that Travis seemed very confused and reminiscent of drug addicts that he treated. Stewart also noticed that Travis had a lesion on the inside crease of his right elbow consistent with intravenous drug use. After meeting with Stewart, the Waltons returned to Dwayne's home where UFO researchers arranged a house call by two medical doctors who were also amateur UFO investigators. When they arrived at 3 p.m, Dwayne forbade them to use their camera or tape recorder, nor would he allow them to ask Travis questions about his experience. The doctors noted the presence of apparent puncture marks and estimated it to be 24 to 48 hours old. That day, stories of Travis's return had begun to spread, and press began calling Dwayne's home in an attempt to reach Travis. Dwayne finally informed law enforcement of Travis's return, calling Sheriff Gillespie, who insisted on seeing Travis immediately. The sheriff drove the 4 hours into Glendale and arrived at 11 p.m. Dwayne and Travis demanded that Sheriff Gillespie not record the interview. After a local UFO group facilitated the connection, Dwayne and Travis moved into a suite at the Sheraton Inn in Scottsdale. Costs were covered by the National Enquirer in exchange for exclusive access to Walton and his story. On November 14th, Travis skipped a polygraph interview with police, but that night, in the presence of Enquirer reporters, a doctor associated with the UFO group had a two-hour conversation with the hypnotized Travis about the incident. The following day, November 15th, Travis was interviewed by Jack McCarthy, a freelance polygraph examiner arranged by a UFO group and the Enquirer. McCarthy concluded that Travis was engaged in a gross deception and had even been intentionally holding his breath in an attempt to beat the machine. On November 22nd, Travis appeared on Phoenix television station KOOL, where he was interviewed about the incident. Travis claimed that he had lost consciousness when struck by a beam of light and that he awoke in a hospital-like room, being observed by three short, bald creatures. He says that he fought with them until a human wearing a helmet led Walton to another room, where he blacked out as three other humans put a clear plastic mask over his face. Walton said he remembers nothing else until he found himself walking along a highway 5 days later with the flying saucer departing above him. In the days following Walton's UFO claim, the National Enquirer awarded Walton and his co-workers a $5,000 prize for best UFO case of the year, after they were said to have passed polygraph tests administered by the Enquirer and the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization. UFOlogist Jim Ledwith said, "For 5 days, the authorities thought he'd been murdered by his co-workers, and then he was returned." According to Ledwith, all of the co-workers who were there, who saw the spacecraft, they all took polygraph tests, and they all passed, except for one, and that one was inconclusive. Skeptics include the story as an example of a UFO hoax prompted by a credulous media circus, with the resulting publicity exploited by Walton to make money. UFO researcher Philip J. Klass, who agreed that Walton's story was a hoax perpetrated for financial gain, identified many discrepancies in the accounts of Walton and his co-workers. After investigating the case, Klass reported that the polygraph tests were poorly administered and that Walton used polygraph countermeasures, such as holding his breath, and that Klass uncovered an earlier failed test administered by an examiner who concluded the case involved gross deception. In 1978, Walton wrote this guy, The Walton Experience, detailing his claims. In 1993, the book served as the inspiration for the 1993 film Fire in the Sky, starring Robert Patrick as Mike Rogers, D.B. Sweeney as Travis Walton, Craig Sheffer as Alan Dallas, and Peter Berg as David Whitlock, and Georgia Emelin as Dana Rogers. Travis Walton made a cameo in the film. Paramount Pictures decided that Walton's account was too fuzzy and too similar to other televised close encounters, so they ordered screenwriter Tracy Torme to write a flashier, more provocative abduction story. On the opening day of Fire in the Sky, March 12, 1993, Walton and Mike Rogers appeared on the CNN program Larry King Live, which also featured Philip J. Klass. Walton has occasionally appeared at UFO conventions or on television. He sponsors his own UFO conference in Arizona called the Skyfire Summit. In 2008, Walton appeared on the Fox game show The Moment of Truth. On January 19, 2021, Walton appeared on an episode of the Joe Rogan Experience podcast. On August 25, 2023, he appeared in the fifth episode of the third season of How To with John Wilson, titled How to Watch Birds. On March 19, 2021, Mike Rogers posted a statement to his Facebook page announcing, "I, Michael H. Rogers, being of sound and rational mind, do hereby give notice that I am no longer to be considered a witness to Travis C. Walton's supposed abduction of November the 5th, 1975. He later clarified, "Travis tried to keep a new remake of the movie a secret from me. He has always had his big secrets that he has kept from me. It angered me. I tried over the last 2 weeks to reason with him, but of no avail. I don't believe Travis is an honest person, and therefore I want nothing to do with him." On April 30th, Rogers placed a call to producer Ryan Gordon, who was working on a new film about the Walton incident. Gordon recorded the call without Rogers' knowledge, as permitted by Arizona law. 2 months later, on July 4th, Gordon publicly posted audio from the call, which featured Rogers explaining, "We were talking in the woods one day. We were talking about creating a UFO hoax, okay? I don't know how the UFO got there, but I remember when I was driving the truck and he jumped out, it was all deliberate. It was all a stage thing, okay? He ran up there and there was something about the UFO not being real, although it looked real." Rogers and Walton later reconciled and Rogers issued a statement retracting his confession. Mike Rogers and the Waltons were known for their interest in UFOs. One member of the logging crew recalled Mike Rogers and Travis Walton arguing about how UFOs can fly. Rogers later acknowledged he had watched the first part of the recent television special that dramatized the Barney Hill alien abduction case, while the Waltons acknowledged prior discussions of wanting to be taken aboard the UFO. The Walton family long had a reputation for pranks and practical jokes. One neighboring family, the Gibsons, recalled being the target of multiple pranks. Within 4 months of the incident, UFO author Raymond E. Fowler, himself a believer in UFOs and abductions, proposed that some members of the logging crew had been the victim of a hoax perpetrated by others in the crew. Authors including Klass and Flock argue that Travis Walton and Mike Rogers planned the incident. As early as 1978, logging crew member Steve Pierce expressed suspicion that the incident had been a hoax. Pierce noted that on the day of the incident, Rogers made the crew stay past dark, whereas they usually ended work at 4 p.m. Pierce recalled that Walton did not work at all during the day of the incident. Instead, he slept in the truck while claiming to be ill from carousing around too much. He also reported that Mike Rogers disappeared from the worksite for 2 hours that day. Authors including Michael Shermer and Philip Klass noted that while the National Enquirer tabloid publicized the opinion of a private polygraph examiner who reported the witnesses as being truthful, it omitted all mention of Walton's prior polygraph examiner, who concluded Walton was being grossly deceptive. They further note that while law enforcement had conducted a polygraph examination of the logging crew during their missing persons investigation into Walton's disappearance, the objective of that investigation was to determine whether the crew had killed Walton, not to investigate UFOs. Thus, they asked only 4 questions, 3 about violence against Walton, and 1 asking if an unusual object was observed. Science writer and skeptic Michael Shermer said, "I think the polygraph is not a reliable determiner of truth. I think Travis Walton was not abducted by aliens. In both cases, the power of deception and self-deception is all we need to understand what really happened in 1975 and after." In the 1980s, reports of alien abductions became more widespread, promoted by authors Bud Hopkins, Johnny Mack, and Whitney Strieber. Folklorist Thomas E. Bullard notes that the stories of alien abductions exhibit a fairly consistent sequence and description of events. Scholars suggest that alien abduction syndrome is the result of sleep paralysis or false memory syndrome. Walton didn't report paralysis, recovered memories, or other common elements of an alien abduction narrative, leading Fire in the Sky screenwriter Tracy Torme to say, "I don't think the Travis case is an abduction case. It doesn't fit any of the other patterns as in the cases that were explored. So many witnesses gone for 5 days, so I think all those things break the mold and make this case unique." Philip J. Klass noted that a UFO abduction mold did not yet exist in 1975. Robert Schieffer, a longtime writer for Skeptical Inquirer and a founding member of the UFO subcommittee of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, has argued for decades that the Walton incident was a hoax. Starting in 2021, Schieffer promoted the hypothesis that Rogers and the Waltons made use of a nearby fire lookout tower to achieve their hoax. While the crew typically travelled back to Heber via Black Canyon Road, Schieffer suggests they returned that night via Rim Road, which passes by Gentry Tower, a 70-foot-tall Forest Service fire lookout tower equipped with a generator, a 200-square-foot living space for the lookout, an outer metal catwalk, and a spotlight. Schieffer suggests Travis walked towards the tower, which was brightly lit above the treetops, until an accomplice in the tower illuminated him with the spotlight. Schieffer proposes that when Rogers later drove the crew back to the supposed abduction site, they actually arrived at a different spot entirely, one closer to their Turkey Springs logging site.
If you like that, then listen to our main show every Wednesday on all good podcast providers. It's Alive Alive, the really, really fake true crime horror podcast. All the guts and gore, none of the guilt. See you on Wednesdays.